This is okay. It's really nice to have people come out on a rather drizzly May evening. This is the last of our more formal sessions, and I'll just, at the end of tonight's talk, just to explain or remind people what's going on in the future. It's very nice also to welcome some new faces here this evening. The reason for the sign-in sheet is because we are Heritage Lottery funded, as you gather from the notices, and we need to just say how many people have come over the whole programme. And also, if there's anything you would like us to send you by email or anything, it's useful if we have a contact email or telephone number on the sheet as well. Sometimes things crop up afterwards. So that's why we do that. But I would like to introduce Ian and Ken.
I don't want to get it wrong.
Some people who have walked along the canal in recent months may have seen a red camper van parked down by the Housen's Gate off Hawcliffe Road.
It's not there overnight, by the way.
And a couple of guys traipsing around the fields looking like this. Well, that's Ian and Ken, who've been taking a metal detector over the floor of fields. We had an opportunity to see their fires. All of this from floor, all of this from the Fairfield?
No,
not in the
hill. Just the front bit.
Just the front bit,
yeah,
okay.
Yes. But the rest of what come from Lancaster.
Okay. So now's an opportunity to get some background into what they do and why. So I'm going to hand over now. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everybody. I'd just like to say thank you very much for the Fairfield Association for allowing us to metal detect on the site. We were approached at the beginning of the year, would we like to come down and detect on the main field before it was ploughed? And we've actually found quite a bit of stuff on there, ranging from Roman right through to modern day. It's a very interesting site. Personally, I detected it about 30 years ago for a few months and brought off what they call a vesica seal, and that it went to the museum. That's 14th century vesica seal. So we're familiar with the site. It was when the pipeline went through, and we asked permission then and got it. So, but I'd just like to say again, thank you very much for allowing us on. We're both members of the Loon Valley and the Kendall Metal Detecting Clubs. We meet once a month, each club meets once a month, one in Lancill and the other one, the Cumbria one, the Kendall one, up in Milnthorpe. So we're very experienced detectorists, if you will, been doing it for years. How I started, I don't know how Ken started, but I borrowed a machine in 1977. From somebody, it was only a cheap one, and as you can tell from the accent, I went down south to visit my parents, and there's a village there, and I went onto the village playing field, got permission of course, and I came off like this. I was literally weighed down with pennies, halfpennies, half crowns, a war medal, you name it, it came off, and I just got the bug. So that's me. I don't know about Ken, how he started.
I think I was bullied into it. I was bulleted in the detector. I was bird watching in my hobby. Then somebody said, well, you couldn't detect with me. So I had to do and I got hooked. That's it. I've done it ever since, on and off, mostly on.
So we're both, as I say, we're both members of the I just give a, before I go on to the finds that we have, you know, that we've did on the five visits so far. We're both in the same club. We're also in the NCMD, National Council for Metal Detecting, and also the North West Federation. So it is very well policed, etc. Now, we also have to take in consideration the portable antiquities scheme, where anything of archaeological or value has to be reported to the local finds liaison officer. And each area, northwest, is a lady called Dot Boughton. So we have to report everything to her within a set time. The National Council Metal Detecting, they sort of are the policing of metal detecting clubs, etc., and individuals, because there's also a federation of individual detectors that people can't get to club meetings. Complete code of conduct. Everybody must adhere to it, otherwise you can get prosecuted for not doing particular things. Oh, wrong way. There's also the Treasure Act. As I said before, anything over 300 years old that contains an amount of gold or silver has to be reported to the, I call it the flow. And that is recorded and taken down either to the British Museum in London, if it's anything of significance. Other than that, she will record it and give the items back to the finder. Now, over the period of 3 years, and I'd hate to think how many have been recorded or put down in a book, there has been 973,000 items recorded. And there are approximately 10,000 detectorists in the country, so it just gives you some idea of what the ratio is. Not around this area, it's mainly over on the east coast. Right, there's your former flora site. We call it the Fairfield site. The fields that were there, we were asked to detect on. It's not very clear, but that's Ken there. And we did five. It is you, because I took the photograph. But these are the fields looking down towards the canal, down to the houses there on the hill, and up towards the wood at the top of top of the hill there. The Lynchets go up that way. Now then, our first visit produced these items. Top ones are horse harness, buckles and rings. A skillet leg, which is the old cooking pot, the old bronze cooking pot. And shoe buckles and coinage, a lead weight, a bronze weight, and the old coinage. The two on this side are an ounce, one penny of George III. So they weigh an ounce. Copper pennies. Yeah. So you just imagine getting 12 of them to a shilling in your pocket. This is why, you can understand why you go for a shilling. But there was also a two pence. They weigh 2 ounces. So you didn't carry them around very often.
But you never find them, do you?
No, they're very scarce, actually, to find. That's the second visit. As you can see, there's still a lot of coinage coming off and buckles, etc. We found a lot of musket shot on there as well. So it's another good way of getting to the site. This is after the fourth. As I say, we've done five visits so far. This is after the fourth visit, and I did a write-up of what we'd found. As you can see, the coinage. Now, on that site, up until we finished, just before it was ploughed, there's in excess of 160 coins come off, ranging from Roman right through, as I say, to modern day. The two, not very clear. There's an Elizabeth groat, which is a fourpence and a tuppence. George V's coinage, Victorian shilling, lead tokens, buckles, barrel keys, because your barrel key, especially the servants, used to have the barrels of wine or the beer down in the cellar. The boss had the key. The servants never. So so that when he wanted a drink, he used to give the key to the servant, go down, pour his glass, and come back up and give him the key. Otherwise, it'd be none left. So that's the idea. That's more or less from the first four visits that we found. Also, coming off there, that's the Elizabeth fourpence, the Roman coin, which needs to be identified properly, and then the lead weights. This is a medieval lead weight, and that weighs just short of a pound, 15¾ ounces, I think we put it at. And then the other ones are bronze, Georgian and Victorian weights. And just a little thing afterwards, I've got some wraps. Not what you think. What we did last Tuesday, knowing that we would come here, we went out and dug down and we decided that every clod of earth that came out that we couldn't break open and there was a piece of metal inside, we bagged up so that one of you, two of you, no, I haven't got a dog. So that somebody can come down. We haven't a clue, honestly. We said we'll put the clod of earth into there, bring it along tonight, and somebody, or whatever, if you want to come down and break it open to see what's in there.
Well, it could be coins, it could be anything.
It could be anything. We don't know.
Where was it from?
The motor is going across.
Off Green Lane.
Green Lane and goes from Skirt. Nope.
There's a pumping station.
There's a gas pumping station.
And we went on there. We've got permission to do the fields, but we said, well, it's close enough. We'll go on there. We've been on loads of times. And we're still
coming across.
But there's soil in there, and there's a bit of... I should have actually bought a small machine. Well, I don't know. But there's quite a few of them there anyway, so... 1, 2, 4, 5, 6. So they've all got it. And what happens is, over a period of 50, 60, 100, 200 years, it's the magnetism in the ground, it sort of congeals around the coin or the bit of metal, and it goes black. And that's when you start to break it open, and you see a little glint of gold or silver, and you think, aha, and then it's a wrinkle. But we have the clue what's in there, so whoever wants to come down at the end and just break one open, you're more than welcome. Because we haven't a clue what's in there. We're itching to find out. So that's the sort of weights. I actually sent this through to Mick and Sue, and it's just a quick write-up of what we've actually found on the four visits that we did on the site. So it's just self-explanatory, is that one. Must be... Also say, you know, we're members of the National Council for Metal Detecting, and every member that joins has to have an insurance. Now that insurance is a public liability, and it's up to £10 million. Not that we're going to do that sort of damage, you know, but it's just to cover the whole hospice of it, because you know, 10,000 people putting in £8 a time to join the NCMD, then they've got the money to get a decent insurance. Sorry about this. Now, these are our own finds, or some of them. That's been found over the last, well, since I started in 1977. And over the period of time, it's just been added to. I've got a lot more than that, and so's Ken. And they're on the display table today, that if you want to have a look at them. But it just goes to show that what we tend to do as well is take all these out. We get invited to go to village fates, fairs, and gymkhanas, and all the rest of it. And we have our own gazebo where we put all this up and show the public what it's about. So, you know, it's... So that's... Again, it's another one. Military. all the military items, the badges, the buttons, the bullets, you know, anything military I've put into a display so that it carries on. A lot of stuff we find is furniture fitments from the Georgian Victorian times, drawer handles and everything. You know, wooden furniture gets old and everything, so it gets busted up, put on a fire or what, you know, and then it's carted out onto the field by accident or by, it just goes out there, and then we can find this, you know, ornate handles from drawers, etc., and all the different furniture fitments that, and door fitments. Shoe buckles is another one that we find a lot of, mainly Georgian. Spur buckle down here, which dates back to about the 15th century, and the one above it, and the two spectacle buckles there. But the larger ones,
majority of those are Georgian.
Are Georgian. Yeah. The big one in the middle is like a sash. Yes. Buckle, you know, from the round edge times.
Yeah.
Now, getting on to the more interesting things, if you've ever been into the museum and had a look at the Roman exhibition up on the first floor, this is one that I found, must be 15 years ago. And it's a Roman bronze cockerel. There's only two ever been found in the country before, or one before this one. That's it there. And then this one was found in a child's grave not so long back down in Cirencester in Gloucestershire. So we could compare the two. Now they've got this one on display. That's as it more or less got cleaned up and come out the ground and then taken into the museum or given to the finds liaison officer. But what they reckon is, it was a lady's ornament from a dressing table. And you could just imagine bronze, although it's green there, but bronze is like gold. And then the enamel on it. Now what they would do is, it was on a plinth, they would put oil into the cavity there, put the lid back on and put a wick out the back, light the wick, and it was just like a cockle's tail. So yeah, the lady would have that on the dressing table or whatever. These are some of, not what we found, but detectors have found in the sort of Cumbria, North Lancashire area. The Crosby Garrett helmet, that was preserved and put back to its original form because it was absolutely squashed up and everything. And the detector
system. It was found in about 70 pieces, I think.
Yeah, so it was just squashed up. And it's all been put back to that. And it was a ceremonial helmet that from the Roman period. And the other one is the Cumbrian Viking barrow. So these two jewels were on the guy's cloak and the buckle as well on the sash. And it was displayed there with these two ornaments on. And those were found by...
Yeah, these were found in Carlisle, weren't they?
Hmm, Cumbrian. So it... Now then, you all know this one. The Silverdale horse. The club, he was actually a club member, Darren Webster. And he was taking his son home from school one day, nice fine afternoon, and dropped his son off at home, said to his wife, a couple of hours detecting, as you do. And he went out and found this. What it was a lump of lead, and he just took the soil out, lifted out, and as he lifted it up, all the coins and the gold, silver hat just fell out. So he put it back down, lifted out far gently than he would have done anyway, thinking it was just a lump of lead. And then underneath, I don't know, did you actually go to the Lancaster Museum when it was on display there? I actually went to the town hall when the guy from the British Museum came up, Mr. Williams. Yeah, Williams. And he did a talk on the Silverdale hoard. And there she is. The bracelets. This is pre-cleaning, because it's all down in the British Museum and everything now, and in the Preston Museum as well, part of it. But these have all been cleaned up since. And the bracelets, there's three inside that one in the middle there. There were three inside one another, and the ornate, you know, decoration on it was absolutely fabulous. And that's the coin that had never been seen before. It was of an unknown Viking ruler.
But some of these silver coins were Arabic ones.
Yeah, the Vikings actually traded with the Arabs.
They went
right over into the Turkish, you know, on the Turkish side of the Mediterranean, etc. And they actually traded over there and other places like England. they pillaged, but they weren't as bad as they made out to be. Not as far as, you know, I have read. Now, in our hobby, we have three magazines: Treasure Hunting, Searcher, and the NCMD Digging Deep. It just keeps us all in contact with all the other clubs. There's club reports and everything. There's what's going on around the country. Is there any questions anybody wants to ask, rather than leave it all to the end? No? Right. So, these are some of the coins that you can find. The one here is in the case. Well, they are all in the case, actually, in this case on the right-hand side here. Charles I, Elizabeth, Edward, Mary, James, Charles, they're all there. So it's just over the period of time. Although Lancaster was a Roman fort as such, there's not a great deal of coinage coming out from anywhere around in a 10-mile radius. I think we've found about... I've found about a dozen bronze coins, that's about all. But artifacts, different, you know, there's a Bronze Age spear, Roman brooch, silver spoon. That thing there is a clog clasp. So, you know, they didn't have laces in them days. They had two pieces of metal. One was looped over, quite ornate on some of them, and they were just clipped into the leather and then looped over, and that's how you did the shoes up. Fobs. The crown I only found recently in this past few months. It's a coronet of a duke. And you can tell that by the what they call the strawberry leaves around the top there. Each crown's got a different formation of crosses or whatever. So it's a duke's, Duke of Lancaster. It could be one of his servants that was on his uniform or whatever. But it's bronze with a silver coating.
What is the size of that?
I should have actually brought it in with me. It's about that size.
There's a badge.
Yeah, it's like a badge. What I actually thought when, you know, before going through all the identifying, I thought that it was something to do with the military. You know, either a crown from a RSM or CSM, or somebody else said it was part of the Scottish regiment because it got mistaken with the thistle on the top. You know, something to do with a band member or whatever. But it's a duke's coronet, and it would have been worn by his servants or whatever, coachman. And then the ring above it, that dates from about 14th century. Two hands, one's a lady, one's a gentleman. And you can tell that by the cuffs. And it was inscribed inside Love God. So it was a nice little find. It's silver with a gold gilt coating.
Can I ask about the Bronze Age spearhead? How do you date things of that kind, of, even approximately?
Give them to the flow. we actually, you know, it's what we tend to do is if we're not too sure, or even if we are, we're just for a second, we take them to the finds liaison officer, Doc. She takes them away, She photographs them, records them, weighs them, and all the rest of it. And if she's not so sure, then she goes down to, you know, send it down to the British Museum, and they sort of authenticate things, hopefully. I think they're sometimes they guess, but it's just leafing through. And this is how I found this coronet, you know, just by going on the internet, Google, boom, it's easy. So.
But that bronze age spearhead is a later one, that isn't it?
Yes.
It's a later one because it's socketed, so they put a wooden shaft in it.
Yeah.
And before that, they split a piece of wood, didn't they? And fastened it into it.
Yeah. Well, it's the same as the axe, the old bronze age axe, you know, the big heavy things. Some of them were socketed.
The later ones were socketed.
And the flat.
The braids must have developed a bit.
Flat ones, or they would have been like this, about that long, and they would have been put into a. Tied onto a pole, so on a shaped stick, shaped piece of wood.
Is there any suggestion that it was a ceremonial axe head, you know, from any damage done to it? Because anything that had been in use constantly would show signs of damage and wear, wouldn't it? So can they tell you things like that?
Well, the ceremonial ones were generally fancy patterns.
A lot of them were. You know, you'll find that even with the spears and everything. See, the two loops on there, ones you can just see, that would have been put onto a pole and then strapped on with a piece of...
Tied onto the shaft, wouldn't it?
A piece of leather or whatever.
Yeah.
So
it looks like it was one that was used.
Yeah. But, it's just... When you find the things, it's the romantic side of it as well, you know. Bring it out, then you've got to find out what it is, and obviously record it. All this, I think, the piggy there is just a gold charm bracelet. The ring brooch was found by a club member down in Staffordshire. And again, it's very similar to the ring, but it's gold. It's only about, thumbnail size, but again it's in the shape of a heart and the lady and the man. And it was complete with the pin as well, which is very rare. So that's gone into the museum down there.
They put £30,000 on that, didn't they?
Yeah.
It's only tiny.
Yeah, it's very tiny, but
and what age is that?
Maybe 1200s.
See, even back then, you know, if you go back to the Middle Ages or late to the... There's some very intricate pieces of jewellery, you know, that were made.
I mean, all Saxon metalwork was really good, wasn't it?
Yep.
All the patterns they put on it.
So, that, I'm afraid, is more or less see you in the autumn. We made some friends there, as you can see. So... Since we came off that visit, the field's been ploughed, it's been sowed down with wheat, and we couldn't get back on because of the weather and the rain. You know, just made it too wet to go back onto because they just ploughed it, flattened it, put the seed in, and that's it. So we didn't want to leave our footprint. So, as I say, if anybody wants to come down
and have a look,
and just have a look. At the finds, and open a goodie bag. We haven't a clue what's in there, honestly. Come on, Mike.
Well, before you do that, I mean, I think it would be worth saying that the little tiny box that's on the corner of the table actually has the finds in it that are...
Well, the more significant finds.
...that have come out of our field.
It's got the hammered coins in and the other bits of silver and also the Russian bale seal.
Yes, I was going to ask you.
I think there was one or two people asking about the Russian bale seal. And it was from flax. And it came from St. Petersburg. Because on the top, it's got SP. And then, or an NP. And it was the Baltic coast.
It used to feel it, there was Murmansk Archangel there.
So they would come into the country. Now, these were known as lead seals, bale seals or whatever, but they were a customs tag. whenever they came into a port, they had to have one of these in each bag, because obviously the customs man would go and say thank you very much, as the government does. We'll have some money for that.
So it was a flaxen bag with that as a seal?
No, it was raw flax.
In the 18th century, there was a lot of flax weaving going on in this area. It was being brought up the loom, obviously.
Dolphin area for flax.
And there wasn't enough flax being grown in England to support what they needed, so they would import it from the rest of Europe. Mm-hmm. And quite a lot came from St. Petersburg.
Yeah, so it was all that, you know. So, but I must have found in excess of 50 of these in different conditions and everything, you know. So it was prolific, you know, with the flats coming in, the wheat, you know, and all the rest. So, but you know, that's off Fairfield. And what we've actually done, there's some more there. It was on a tray, but Tony hasn't sent the tray with it on. So no, it's all right. There's a couple of coins there as well. Were on the tray, but it gives you some idea of the stuff that's come off. There's quite a few coins there, bits and pieces, but that's what's come off.
Can you draw any conclusions about this area specifically from your finds? Could you?
Most of the coinage to me dates from about 1700 onwards. There's not much earlier than 1700, not really, right?
Is there, in your findings, any conclusions that you've come to about the use of the land or the population?
There can't be that many people lived in the area, really.
No.
Just on the south side of the city.
But it's one of the most prolific fields for coinage that we've ever been in.
Really?
You know, that 6-7 acres up there, it's one of the most prolific. And as I say, I did there about 30 years ago. And I was pulling off coinage and that there, and the Versicle Seal, and one or two other bits and pieces. But no, it's one of the most prolific for coins, mainly Georgian. Again,
so would that suggest it was a thoroughfare kind of thing, people walking across?
I would have a guess that it was recreation. You know, with the amount of coinage that was on there, the late 1700s, right through until post Second World War, because we've actually found. These were off Tuesday, but we've actually found dozens of these 303 cases on that site as well.
What's the 303
case? It's rifles. During the First and Second World War, it's the 303 cartridge. They were about so long.
On all over.
I would imagine it was used in their exercise area as well for the, you know, the Home Guard or some regiment. We've actually been on the site. We got permission to do a site up at Keller, and it was an encampment during the First and the Second World War. And a lot of the, if I can run back through, a lot of the military stuff on there, believe it or not, has come off that site, especially the Lancashire regiments. The knife. As you can just see, there's a crest on the bottom of it, and that's the East Lancs Regiment. And it must have been either from an officer's mess or a sergeant's mess, and that the handle was either bone or ivory or whatever, wood. But I found that knife blade on that site, but most of it is from there. The bullets, the insignia, buttons, and quite a few East Lanc badge. Royal Lancashire,
King's
Own, you know, so it must have been quite a sight at one time.
Yeah, it's probably worth saying kind of locally that there clearly were firing exercises going on in that general area during the Second World War, and the little bit of land that goes up from the back of Robin Loxham's house and garden at Kyle's farm, that's going up towards where the Deason's Field is, that's actually called the Gun Range. And there was on there, until fairly recently, a building and there was actually a shooting club.
A shooting club?
Yes, there was a shooting club that operated, it did its sort of recreational things there, so I think they had, you know, drinks and dinner and things like that, it was seen in this building, but they would obviously be going out, you know, around here.
So, I would imagine, because it's in vicinity of Barrow Barracks, that's where quite a few of the Lancashire regiments were. So I would imagine exercise over there, up on the moors and everything, you know, because we go up there. One thing I have found, which I've given to the landowner, was during the First World War, if a soldier that was eligible to fight, old enough to fight, but had an affliction, asthma or wounded even, and he came back off the front line, he would walk down the street, young lad, oh, my brother is out on the sun or whatever, what are you doing here? And they used to give him a white feather.
Mm-hmm.
So what the government did, and there was about 470 odd thousand silver badges, and they're all for God and for king and country, and they had to wear one of these on the right lapel. And on each one, there was a number, a six-digit number. And I found one local into a Thomas Luthwaite. And it's something else that you research on as well. It's something out of the ordinary. Guy called Thomas Luthwaite. He was in one of the Lancashire regiments. He was up at Barrow Barracks. He was only 17 when he joined. But he came from Carlisle, originally. His mother and father went to Dumfries, and they were hotel owners up there. Something happened. So, you know, I'm into genealogy as well. That's my wet weather hobby. So I traced this badge back to this family. And apparently, the family's sort of more or less died out. Boys went away, got killed or whatever. And I've actually given them the badge to the landowner with all the write-up. But they moved up to Dumfries. He had a bit of an altercation with his parents or whatever and came down to Lancaster and joined the army. But he had some affliction or whatever, asthma I think it was. So he couldn't go out to fight. And he got award, you know, given one of these badges.
To show that
he's enlisted but he's unable to fight. So, but it's all little things like that that, you know, I enjoy looking at, that, you know, Ken does as well. You know, we compare notes and everything, we come off a site, what have we found today, all that. Let's research it. So, yes, ma'am.
When we had the local history talk a few months ago, when you were here adding to what Mike Derbyshire was saying, and you were explaining that actually some of the coins might have ended up on the Fairfield land because they weren't necessarily dropped at the time, but it might have come out of the Midlands elsewhere.
Yeah.
And then I also thought you said something about, was it in the Jacobites, that they might, or some time, that they might have actually camped?
They could have been camps there, because obviously, if you, I don't know, have you been onto the fields at all, walked them?
No.
And gone on there? Once the crop's off,
right.
Go and stand up by the wood, and it's a lovely place to go over a nice afternoon detecting, because you've got the castle there, you know, and the priory, lovely weather, the cattle, you know, what more could you want? And you're finding stuff.
We were talking to an archaeologist about the land, and she said that. And I think this is older in medieval times. People who had a house in Lancaster and a strip of land outside would plough their rubbish into the land. So partly because most of the rubbish was compostable and it would enrich the soil. Mm. But in that, as I say, in the middle, there would be bits and pieces that maybe shouldn't have been there.
Well, don't forget there was, as we know it today, sanitation was very poor in them days. And you had what they called the thunder box in a shed down the bottom of the garden. I can remember them. But they used to have to be emptied out, of course. And what they used to do, they called them night soil trips. So what they would do, you know, they would employ somebody to go around all the houses in an area in Lancaster, tip all the into a barrel and take it as far away as possible and dump it on a field in the corner somewhere. And I've found one such site, and I've pulled off quite a few Victorian silver, bronze or whatever coins, and that was a, not what we call a night soil site. But as you say, the middens, you know, that it was all done by hand, milking. Even it took a guy a day to plough an acre. So if you've got a seven acre field like it is there, it would take him at least 7 days to plough. So it's one man, a boy and a horse, and a plough behind. It was only just one furrow. They would then put all the cow droppings out onto the field, but they would be working, they would be handkerchief in the pocket, bring it out, and warm. The coin would drop.
Casual losses, weren't
they? Casual losses, you know. Just lost out the pocket or whatever, and then spread out on the field. So it's.
And then by subsequent plough, it just being spread.
And it would just plough up and everything. But I'm just sorry that we couldn't get onto there when they ploughed it and flattened it out, because that's when you can walk, eyes only, and you can spot things, especially after a shower of rain when it's lobbed off the
drain off
the, you know, the soil that's on the object, you know, pipe stems and everything. It's all interest. I think there's a there's a pipe bowl in there that dates from the very early times of smoking, but I've got one at home. It's of a nun, and it must have been off the top of a pot. That was found by the owner. It's just surprising, just after the plough and sown it down, to walk it, what you can find.
But there's very few clay pine bullets on that field, isn't it?
Yeah. I think they might, we might find some, you know, come.
Yes, sir. What, after it's been ploughed, you'd find
them.
Otherwise, there wasn't any really showing, was there?
Yeah. As you can see, we enjoy the hobby. And we thank you very much for allowing us on.
Probably worth explaining the see you in the autumn bit. So, Ian and Ken are going to come back in the autumn to go over that field again because it's been ploughed now and that will disturb the soil and so other things may have come up to detectable level. And then we're also assuming that later on in the summer and autumn they will also do some metal detecting in the West Field and in the one that most people know as the Gleason's Field, which is the one in between the field that's been ploughed and Lucy Brook. They can go into those fields because we own them and Natural England agree that it's okay for them to do that. I think we're kind of interested in having them have a look at the other fields that belong to the fauna part of the nature reserve as well. But in order to do that, we're going to go and have to talk to the council, because it's the council that owns the land and we lease it from them. There could well be more finds.
Yes, sir.
What sort of depth are you detecting?
Right, there we go. I knew somebody was going to ask that. You know, some of the cheaper machines, they just go bleep over the, you know, and that, then what we call discrimination. Now, the modern machines nowadays, they will discriminate between iron, ferrous and non-ferrous. So you're not digging up chunks of iron all the time because it's time consuming. You can go from here to the wall and get six signals and six of them would be a lump of iron. Now the machines that we both use, it would discriminate between iron and that. Now something like that, Haitney, George III, 1796 or so, 1806, that will be detected to about 8 inches, 9 inches. But that is as deep as a plough would go, what they've actually ploughed. If you'd have gone, walked on there, I actually walked on there just after they were ploughed, and they've gone about that deep. Mm. Just to turn the sod over so that the grass goes down and rots, and then they flatten it out and then put it, because that's all nutrition as well. But you can just imagine that that's down 8 inches. At any angle, we can go that way and miss it because it's on edge. We come back the other way. This is why we don't go in a line. I go from A to B to C to D. You know, it looks as though I'm going crazy, but you know, you just go wherever you think and just go along and detect. But it will pick up that to about 8 inches. And that's as far as it is. Because if you just imagine, that's the topsoil, which is all dark, it's been fed and all the rest of it. When you get down to there, the soil changes colour. And that's where you get all the hard pack, what we call the hard pack of the clay, the stone and everything, because that's as far as it will go. And the water, unless it floods or whatever. Now, when they plough that up, that come up to the top and just be laying on the surface. And this is where your eyes only come into it. But, you know, that's as far as you need to go. And if you go very carefully, you can pick it up. But, as you can see, the amount of stuff that we've picked up off there already. But,
would you like to have a closer look, or have a ferret?
Will somebody come and open these bags? Because we're absolutely itching to find out what's in there. Yeah, come on then. I've got some... Yes, and a sheet.
Are you not going to come soon?
Cool.
I'm interested.
Take your pick.
So we just pick one up.
Yeah. Yes.
And then just do a and then presumably when I open it.
I'm sorry, I